Hey, everybody, welcome to another First Run Bald Movies. Man, it's been a while. I feel like it's been a while. Maybe it hasn't, but I feel like it's been a while. Jim and I went to see Bad Times at the El Royale, a movie written and directed by Drew Goddard, who I kind of like. I was really impressed by his Cabin in the Woods. He did the screenplay for Martian, which I thought was a bang-up adaptation of Andy Weir's novel. I know he's done other stuff that he cut his teeth with J.J. Abrams on Alias and Lost. And he cast just bevy of stars: Chris Hemsworth, Dakota Johnson, Jeff Bridges, John Hamm, Nick Offerman, and added some fairly good or impressive, I thought, newcomers or people I'm not very, very familiar with. Cynthia Erivo, who has made a lot of noise on Broadway, and Lewis Pullman. And what did you think of this movie, Jim?
I actually liked it quite a bit. I thought,
the
setup was really good. It kept me in suspense. It kept me what the fucking through, I don't know, about an hour of this movie, maybe more. Because this was a pretty long movie, right? 2:15, I think.
It was a very long movie, yes.
Yeah, so maybe like an hour and a half, you're what the fucking. And then I guess at the end, they didn't quite get to the place I think they were going for, at least for me. I'm notoriously hard to get to, but I think they didn't quite stick the landing. But man, I enjoyed the experience.
I mean, this is like the anti-Mandy, apparently, because in the first 15 minutes, I was like, oh boy, this is going to be good. 45 minutes later, I'm like, there's no way they can justify this by the end of the film. And then by the end of the film, I'm like, all right, well, it's not a complete waste of time, but I thought this movie is Hateful Eight with a little bit of Way of the Gun sensibility. But unfortunately there's a way too much Hateful Eight, way too much dialogue between mysterious characters that I don't know why I should care about, that adds up to, like, you know, some epic violence at the end. And this movie gets a rhythm where you've got these long period of, like, fairly slow, more or less absorbing dialogue pieces, character-driven pieces that are punctuated by an extreme act of violence, and then on to the next one, rinse and repeat until we get to the climax of the film. I don't know. I felt like it was long.
It was
a frequent complaint of this movie. It was very slow in its pacing and didn't have enough action, nor, unlike Mandy, who had at least crazy visuals, trippy visuals. The movie's gorgeous to look at, and it's very well acted.
Yeah.
It's just, it felt like it just, in the almost exact same way of Hateful Eight, it just didn't quite come together to justify the length of time it spent with me watching it.
I might slightly agree with that last part, but I think it kept me in suspense enough. Like, maybe it didn't have the action, but it almost had like a Coen-esque feel to it in the beginning where they were kind of layering different perspectives over each other. You know, we'd see a scene from one character's perspective, then we'd see a chunk of that scene from another character to let us know, oh, hey, they were watching this happen. And I felt like it was very, very much out of the textbook of a Coen film. And also, I mean, you're right on the money with the comparison to Tarantino. I think there's a lot of Tarantino both in the dialogue and in some of the visual style.
Oh yeah, I think Tarantino should check his garage, because I think someone stole his movie and filed the serial numbers off, and the thief is Drew Goddard, Goddard. That's the other thing Goddard did. He created Netflix Daredevil, and is pretty much responsible for the exceptional first season of that show.
Okay, cool.
Like I said, I wanted to like this film. The other thing is, I felt like, you know, even way more so than Mandy, this film was marketed like some crazy gonzo kind of pulp fiction thing, and it is not. It is slow and character driven, dialogue driven, thematic driven. It is slow right up until the point that it's not. And even then, like, even the end of the movie, even though it picks up the pace quite a bit, and I thought, I don't know, I felt like the movie had been a lot better if they had introduced... It's hard to talk about this movie without spoilers, because it kind of revolves around a lot of plot and character introductions, but I felt like some of the characters were introduced so late that it felt like an ass pull, like some of the things that happened in a resolution. But yeah, and unfortunately, like I said, I was expecting a Gonzo kind of John Wick, but more of a thinker. And I didn't get that because the, you know, you remember the trailer, it's all just people getting shot by shotguns and flying through the air and heads exploding and things on fire. And, you know,
yeah, I think the trailer, you're right. I agree with you. The trailer does not accurately depict what this movie is going to be. Cause from the trailer, I got kind of almost a Supernatural vibe. I was thinking, oh, Chris Hemsworth comes in and maybe it's his connection to Thor. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just something in my brain that associates him with supernatural stuff. But I expected to see something along those lines and I never got it. This is very much more a like noir kind of story than it is some crazy Gonzo supernatural acid trip.
Chris Hemsworth reminded me a lot, and this is why I think I got confused. Like, Chris Hemsworth is playing Brad Pitt from California.
Okay.
And then, you know, it's so funny because this is the anti, because it involves a cult leader, like the whole thing, top to bottom. Like, except for the only difference is that Mandy connected with me, didn't connect with you. This movie connected with you, didn't connect with me. Since you're the one who liked it, is there anything else you want to talk about, spoiler-free, before we talk about trailers and then get into the spoiler section?
Yeah, I mean, being as vague as possible, I will say the ending didn't quite connect. I agree with you, like, once they kick it into gear, there should have been some bigger payoff, but some of the problem is they reserve, like you said, the character reveal until too late in the movie. And by that time, there isn't enough time left in the film for me to actually connect with the character and care what happens to these people, you know?
Right, right.
So I do agree. Like, it left me at about, like, 70% of the way there thinking this is a really good movie. But honestly, 70% was good enough, I suppose.
Hmm. I would say that, do you agree with me that, like, this might be, if it does work on you, it's still going to be more of a good and not great film. Like, yeah. I don't think this film is going to be spoken kind of any kind of hushed or hallowed tones.
Well, I'll tell you what's great about it. Can't think of his name. Don Draper.
John Hamm.
John Hamm is fantastic. And Jeff Bridges are both. Like, Jeff Bridges delivers a couple of performances in here that are... Mm-hmm. Kind of breathtaking. And you know, it can't ultimately like make the movie for me, but they made those scenes.
No, like I can see this being on like a, like you can see like 30 seconds here and there being on an Oscar highlight reel and you wouldn't bat an eye.
Yeah.
And I'll even throw in, I thought that Lewis Pullman character, I haven't seen him in anything. I guess he's been in two or three other films I've not heard of, but I thought he was very, very impressive.
Who is that?
He's the bellhop, the clerk, the bartender, the...
Right, the maintenance man.
The maintenance man, the housekeeper, the whole thing.
Right.
And I thought Cynthia Erivo was, I mean, she is just really good at singing. Like, amazing. And that was one of the things I think did work. Like, every time that she was singing and providing essentially a soundtrack, a minimalist soundtrack for the... For the film, I thought the film, the movie kind of kicked up a notch.
Mm-hmm. And the movie does have great music in it, too. It's not just her singing, though that is amazing.
Right.
Michael Giacchino, mm-hmm. I don't know how to say that, even though I'm taking Italian lessons. he is, if you recognize him from Lost, he's the composer who did all the music there. I think he provides a great soundtrack here as well. Plus, you know, you throw in an amazing singer like that and you're going to have a good soundtrack.
It's also, it just felt like the greatest hits from the late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah.
So it's stylish, it's slick, it just didn't come together for me. Do you want to talk about anything else, or should we move on to trailers?
Let's get to the trailers.
All right. We saw a fuller cut. This is the, I guess, the final trailer release of the Queen biopic, Bohemian Rhapsody. And I got to say, because, like, you know, the thing, I've always thought this looked great. I've always thought that I want to see it from the very beginning, because I love Queen. I think Freddie Mercury is a fascinating character, and I really can't wait to see Rami Malek's take on him. But, you know, I've always heard these, like, disturbing things about, like, the band insisting it be more than about that Freddie Mercury, and to kind of, like, do a light touch with the gay and the AIDS stuff, which to me is really defanging a lot of the interest I have in the movie. This trailer, I don't know, maybe this trailer's all of the material that speaks to that, but, like, I guess I was impressed by how Freddie-centric it was and how it's seeming to really lean into the later parts of his life and, you know, his role in in the middle of the AIDS epidemic and what that meant. And so I guess I'm even more excited to see it now. I don't see any like red flags or flashing like, oh, this might suck kind of things. What about you?
No, this is a much better trailer to get me hyped.
Right.
Than essentially what was a teaser before with a bunch of Queen songs in it. And showing, you know, Rami Malek in a jumpsuit and shit, like that's fine. But this one actually told me that there's a story here and it seems like an interesting one. There's going to be some conflict and it's going to be more of the story of Freddie Mercury, which I'm excited to see. There's actually two biopics that we got trailers for that I'm excited for.
Oh, shit. Let's just roll into that. Elton John, The Rocket Man.
Yeah.
I think this is interesting because it stars Taron Egerton. Who's the main guy from Kingsman. And if you remember our review of the fun but ultimately forgettable Kingsman 2 Golden Circle, the highlight of that movie was Elton John's kick-ass cameo. And it tickles me to death that I feel like over beers, Sir Elton John took Taron Egerton to the side. He's like, you know, I want to talk about your jawline and cheekbones.
And how... And Taron thought, oh, no, here we go.
And then he's like, now just hold still. And he put his glasses on him.
Hashtag me too. Oh, no.
Yeah, that's right. But, like, damn. I would never have called that, but he's kind of pulling it off in the trailer. And Elton John's music's amazing. Another guy who's got a pretty incredible story and has spanned just decades and been, anyone that can be relevant as an entertainer over the course of decades is a pretty fascinating, inventive person.
Mm-hmm.
So, because the public just is not, you know, they're pretty fucking fickle. So I'm pretty excited to see that. This was more of a teaser, so I don't have a lot more to say than that. Looks
same
good.
Here. Even
sounds
if it's
good.
Just an excuse to listen to some Elton John music in a nice theater with a good sound system, I'm in for it.
And I got to say, I really don't know anything about Elton John other than the fact that he's gay.
Mm-hmm.
And he has fabulous wardrobe.
He loves sequins. Oh, my God. He loves sequins.
He does. I'm really curious to see his character fleshed out a little bit. Moving on, there is a new installment of the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo movie series, Girl in the Spider Web. I don't know. Did you miss this one or did you see this one?
Cause no, I saw this one.
Okay. I thought this looks cool. This looks like a female Punisher.
Mm-hmm.
Even more so than the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo stuff I've seen before. It looks a little bit more slick and confident. I don't know who made it or shot it or wrote it. Because I've not seen the American version. I've only seen the original Swedish version of the first book.
Huh.
So I don't know what to compare it to, but it looked like it looked like a much more lavish and slick production.
I think this one looks potentially better than the first American remake of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I did see that one, and I thought it was good, but not great. Mm-hmm. This one, man, there's a lot of pathos going on, and I know that's what these books are about.
Right.
I understand that, but wow, it looks dark. Looks real dark.
Mm-hmm. We also had Gillian Flynn, who is really hot right now, combining forces with Steve McQueen, which if you don't recognize his name, he's the one behind the Fassbender vehicles, Hunger and Shame, which are fantastic. 12 Years a Slave, which actually is also a Fassbender vehicle, now that I think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not a vehicle. He's definitely a memorable passenger. And now a movie called Widows, which apparently is a remake or a re-envisioning of an 80s television show involving wives of female criminals who get killed and they pull off a job. It stars a bunch of women that you've heard of before, Viola Davis, Michelle Rodriguez. Speaking of Cynthia Erivo pops up here. Carrie Coon, and they are joined by Colin Farrell, Danielle Kaluuya, Robert Duvall, old ass mummified Robert Duvall, and Liam Neeson. I think this looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah,
it sounds like Ocean's 8.
It sounds like a really stupid premise, honestly. But I think the 80s
network television series remake.
No, the fact that because you're wives of criminals, you might be okay at criminaling.
Oh, right.
But they're forced into it, as far as I can understand from the trailer. Yeah. So it makes more sense. And I think it's going to be pretty good.
I'm looking forward to it. Another one that this could go either way for me. I really have respect for the people involved in the project, but it's called The Green Book, which if you know anything about, I'd say America's darker past, but, you know, America. That was a guide that black people used traveling around the United States to kind of is like a thumb book for African-American friendly eateries, establishments, dance halls, hotels, like a survival guide for the South, especially. And the premise of this is Viggo Mortensen is a bouncer who's hired by Mahershala Ali to escort him as he's a concert pianist, and he's going on a nationwide tour, and Viggo is essentially his security. Like I said, it could be interesting and moving and poignant, or it could be pretty smarmy and saccharine and tone deaf. But I really like Ali. I really like Mortensen, and I'm hoping it's going to be, you know, something that's Oscar worthy rather than something that's cringy. Do you got any observations on it?
No, we'll see. I'm torn on this one too. I don't know which way it's going to go.
Yeah. All right, Jim. Tell us, to sing us the song of this movie, because
I'm nowhere near as good as she is. I can't.
Here, let me get a metronome.
Oh, that makes it better.
I don't have much more to say. Like, the other thing about this movie is I don't know what it was trying to say, and it's fine to just tell a story, but I felt like there wasn't a lot of story to be told here, and like I kept on thinking, like, well, maybe they'll make this about something about 70s politics, or it'll be something about female empowerment, or it'll be something about elder care, but it's very much a Tarantino flick, except for it just didn't have, I don't know, there's just something missing in the early goings. Actually, the very early goings, Nick Offerman walking into a hotel room, stripping the carpet, taking up planks from the floor, burying something, and just watching him work for like 5 minutes and then getting cut in half with a shotgun, I was all in on this movie. Uh-huh. I'm like, hot damn, that's how you start a movie. John Hamm shows up, and he's got the worst New Orleans accent of all time. And I'm starting to think, but then you find out that's actually a part he's playing. Uh-huh. So I'm like, okay, this is back to like being smart. All right, I'm back. But then the movie just kind of, for me, falls apart until the third act. And unfortunately, by the time the third act came around, which I thought did have some genuine suspense and, you know, started re-engaging me. But it reminds me a lot of The Hateful Eight. It reminds me a lot of Suburbicon, where it just didn't quite live up to the promise of its casting and its promotion. And I was just really, really bored from, like, the 30-minute mark till the hour 30, maybe even the hour 45 mark. What was I missing?
I don't think you were missing that much. Honestly, I think there's some kind of message about sin and forgiveness in this movie. But, you know, between the priest and, or, well, the not priest and the soldier, ex-soldier. Those themes didn't strike a chord with me, unfortunately. Because there is no world in which I go confess to a priest my sins and feel like I'm getting some kind of absolution. So, these are age old kind of ideas too. There's nothing new and interesting about it. Mm-hmm. However, I think I think this hits you a little better at the end if you are inclined to toward that persuasion of belief, let's say. Mm. It just didn't do it for me.
I don't know, because I question that just because it's all fake.
It is, but I think that's what it's saying. Like, it doesn't matter that, you know, you're confessing to the priest. It's about being sorry for the things you've done, mm-hmm. and understanding what you've done and why you've done it. And mm-hmm. I don't know. There's something in there, but you're right. I do think it's a little muddy, and it's too little too late, in my opinion. Because mm-hmm. by the time we find out who this kid is, there's not enough time for me to actually care about him as a person.
Yeah, I feel like that maybe, as cool as the Nick Offerman thing was, maybe this film should have started on was like a flashback to that kid shooting birds.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, in between chapters, we see him enlist in the army. And then we see him be a crack sniper on the battlefield. And then we see him, you know, get up from that sea of corpses. So then by the third act, we're primed for this kid to be more than just a heroin addicted junkie.
Yeah.
But as it is, like, in fact, that was such a big head scratcher when Cynthia Erivo, her character, Dorothy Sweets, I think, or something, Miss Sweets, yeah. whatever her name is. She's like, you know, the guy's like, you know, oh, I can't kill anybody, can't kill anybody. How many people have you killed? 132 or 123. And I'm like, oh. And then when they go to the maintenance closet, I'm like, oh, you're going to find out this kid's a serial killer. But
right.
instead, in like 5 minutes, we find out that he was a crack shot, that he went to Vietnam. He, like, you know, probably won a whole bunch of medals. And he's got PTSD from all the terrible things he did in the battlefield and all the things he survived. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And he is here to essentially be the deus ex machina, deus ex maintenance closet that gives this movie a happy ending that didn't feel earned.
And well, they also play with your expectations, and they readjust your perspective many, many, many times in this movie, right?
Yeah.
I mean, literally, they readjust your perspective by showing the same scenes from different perspectives. But
yeah.
they also, at the end, recontextualize everything you know about this kid, or you think you know,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, you think he's a junkie, you think he's a killer, mm-hmm. you think he's a pervert in this pervert hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out he's none of those things. He's actually a sympathetic figure. It just wasn't enough for me.
I kind of hate that the more, because that's just straight up Kaiser Sose. That's just straight up Usual Suspects. Like, when the twist is you've lied and withheld information from the audience until the very last minute when it's,
mm-hmm.
and then you play it and like, haha, how clever. Like, I don't know, dog. Not for me. There's also some mysteries that they don't, like, I felt like there's a couple things that I thought they were going for something cool and then it just didn't pay off. For example, Jeff Bridges' Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when they get to the point where it seems like maybe they can talk their way out of this, and Chris Hemsworth is like, okay, now, priest, what's your real name? And you realize that he himself doesn't know,
mm-hmm.
in that instant, and, like, how absurd that would sound to an interrogator. And I'm like, oh, God, this is going to be, like, it's kind of like Marathon Man. Like, you're going to see this guy be tortured for information that he literally cannot and doesn't possess right now,
mm-hmm.
For a way, and they've smartly dealt with. I mean, that's one thing they did play straight up, but then they didn't do anything with it.
Yeah.
Jeff Bridges essentially snaps and goes on an epic rampage,
mm-hmm.
Which was cool, but I felt like that was a plot point that they dropped. I felt like they killed John Hamm way too early.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and I don't, because, like, that, to me, the FBI investigation and the film, that's the other thing. Like, I thought they're going to build something with the film, but no, that.
Right. It seems like it was maybe JFK.
Could have been JFK. It could have been RFK. It could have been MLK. As we've seen from JFK, the movie, there's a whole lot of dudes getting killed back then.
But they just burned the tape.
They just burned the tape. Yeah. So I thought that was a bizarre choice too, to have that as almost, it's like a MacGuffin that we didn't even know about until the third act.
Uh huh.
And then they burned the MacGuffin.
Right.
I thought that was really, that's, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe Goddard was like, okay, I'm doing a lot of Tarantino. I better swerve on a couple of these things.
Right.
But the swerves felt unnatural. like overcorrect. I think he overcorrected in a swerve, lost control, and spun out in the final curve of the movie.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's Darlene Sweet. I kind of like her arc the most, and she gets some of the most screen time of any of the players here. Because
what is her arc?
Well, I think her arc is like being tempted by this money, and ultimately choosing the thing that she loves doing, as opposed to just the money. But I don't know, because there are a couple of swerves along the road there too, because you think at one point that Jeff Bridges has drugged her to, as he puts it, diddle her. That's not the case, but I never got over that. I never got over that betrayal by Jeff Bridges' character and started to like him again.
Yeah.
From that moment on, where he pours the drugs into the drink, he lost me.
Mm-hmm.
And so the ending fell a little flat for me, because I don't want him there in that room while she's singing. He hasn't earned it, in my opinion.
Yeah, especially since, like, to me, her arc was, got this guy who's got power over me. He's sleazy. He's going to force me to do things that I don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Then I escape that situation. I'm in this other terrible situation with another guy who is just using his power to abuse women. And eventually she gets in a situation, like, because she made the right choice. Like, because I think you're supposed to understand that she didn't take that guy up on his offer and it was like, you know, fuck off.
Mm-hmm. And she's going to try to make it on her way. Yeah.
And so she gets and not getting, you know, and probably getting paid nothing to do it, because she's staying way off Reno at this hotel, mm-hmm. at this flea bag motel, which, yeah, I want to talk about that here in a minute. So then she gets a ton. She gets this windfall of money. So now she's got the money and she can do what she loves.
Yeah, it's almost like a revenge story.
Yeah, or like hey, if you do the right thing, maybe Jeff Bridges 10 years ago will steal a buttload of money and split it with you, mm-hmm. and you'll get out with your lives and that money and the skin of your teeth. It's a weird moral or weird plot line, I thought.
Yeah, and I mean, that's kind of where it falls into the Coen-esque territory for me, is like,
yeah,
this confluence of events that comes together. You know, all these weird characters are in the same place just out of happenstance, you know? Mm. There's nothing that actually draws them here except for Jeff Bridges and John Hamm, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the only two who come here for a reason.
Yeah.
Everybody else is just kind of here.
I did like the hotel itself. I thought was a cool concept. A resort that's built on the state line of Nevada and California. It plays that up, and they're like, here, we got some, we actually have some gambling here on the side, and literally on the side. But like, that never became as fun as they promised it to be. Like, it's a casino, but they've lost his gambling license, so you can't gamble. They've got all these like recording things set up, but the only thing that's really happening is an FBI sting. And this hotel seems like then there's like shadowy people that run it and might be doing up to the, like, but it never really builds up to anything. It's just it just felt like it was there to be cool, which I guess is fine,
right.
But it's like, you know, it's just like the whole set is, I'm sure that, like, that's not a real hotel. This it can't be, right?
Probably not. I mean, like, I'm sure there are places like it, but
even then, the set that they built for the inside of it, like, they burn it down, like, mm-hmm. it's just like a really cool thing that they don't do anything with. And it felt a little bit like, you know, in the shitty Schumacher Batmans, where like Batman would wear ice suit just so they can sell a toy. Like, I felt like the hotel's a little bit like, it's there to sell something, but it didn't quite sell. It was there to provide a sexy, slick backdrop, but, you know, I don't know. It felt like, was there that's the thing. Maybe there was a market in the late 60s for a very stylish, cool casino Rat Pack motel. But
no, I feel like there's some weird thing tied up in the cult stuff that Chris Hemsworth is talking about, with right and wrong and like making a choice. And you see
don't
a lot of characters
by their rules. Yeah.
Right. You see a lot of characters walking right down that line between California and Nevada, right? And mm-hmm. I feel like they're going for something thematic there, but I'm with you. I don't think it ever quite came together. And the reason I like this movie is because I thought there were some great scenes in it. I had fun. It kept me in suspense most of the time. But yeah, I'll agree. Most of it didn't pay off in the end.
Yeah, I felt like if they'd paced that stuff out about the bellhop a little bit more, and if there's a little bit more action in the mid part to keep me engaged, because there's so much what the fuck in the first 15-20 minutes, but mm-hmm. then you just almost catching up with these people and why you should care about them, and it just never quite made the connection. Did you recognize the sister of Dakota Johnson?
She played, I don't recognize any of what you just said.
The young girl who was like the...
Rose?
Rose, exactly. Uh-huh. She was the young female mech pilot from the latest Pacific Rim. She's the one that built that little scrappy Jaeger.
That movie fell out of my head immediately after I watched it.
Well, I just like, because I recognize her. I recognize her. She's like a you know, a slightly younger version of the Kick-Ass girl, and it was bugging me, so I looked it up, and sure enough, that's where I recognized her from. So I don't have much more to say. Do you got stuff to say about this movie?
No, not a ton.
I think it's our plan, correct me if I'm wrong, Jim, to see First Man sometime this next week and give a review, because we really want to see both these films, but we got fucked over because none of them had a early release that was compatible with our schedule. It's just a weird thing, and then we had to see one on Friday, so I think we're going to try to see First Man sometime next week and review that, because I really want to see that. And then other than that, I'm not sure what the next Bald movie is going to be, but I hope you enjoyed this one. Like I said, I can see people really digging this. Just like there's a lot of people that swear Hateful Eight's their favorite Tarantino movie.
Yeah, I hated Hateful Eight.
It's just not mine, but I think there is enough style and substance here to if you can get past the length and how dry some of it is in the middle. There's some excellent performances and some really slick and stylish filmmaking. But ultimately, I thought it was a disappointment. We'll be back for another Bald movie here pretty soon. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.